through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
Welcome into Tom, Jake, and Stacy. Pretty sad Monday morning. It was a sad Sunday for sure as we all got the news that Kobe Bryant, his young daughter Gianna, and seven others passed away as a result of a helicopter accident yesterday morning in Calabasas, California. And I don't know about you guys. I know, you know, we all lead different lives and we're away from the studio, but I spent a lot of time yesterday just watching the coverage of this story, and I was never a Laker fan. I appreciated the greatness of Kobe Bryant. I think being, you know, working in the media, and I mean, look, he was always on highlight reels, etc. But I think what I got clued into yesterday a little bit was just the connection that Kobe Bryant had to a national type of sports fan, not just the Laker fan, right? He's not just that type of athlete. I mean, he's not, you know, Trevor Ariza when he played for the Lakers or Lamar Odom or somebody like that. I mean,
right. This
is somebody who truly transcended his team, transcended his sport, and forged a real bond. Like a real bond connection with his fans to the point where it's like, you know, he is a friend. Mm-hmm. When you have that kind of connection to an athlete or an artist or an actor or a musician or something, they really become your friend. You follow them every single day. They're in your life and they occupy a giant special space in your life. And when they're gone, especially at age 41, when they had so much more life to live and so many more gifts to share with us. I mean, how else do you put it? It's incredibly sad.
Yeah, he was a hero. He was an icon to many. Like you said, not just to Laker Nation, but to a national audience, not just a basketball audience worldwide. I mean, this was a special individual in terms of, you know, the sporting community. And when I heard the news, I was just literally, we had just got done with church. We were getting in the car. Brooke, you know, turned on social media and told me the news, and I couldn't believe it. I knew she wasn't kidding, but that was also like my initial reaction. That was like a hoax or something that was put on social media, and it just was blown away. I was blown away by it, and you know, as details kept pouring in, and I just couldn't wrap my mind around it. And then to learn that his daughter Gianna was on the plane too. I mean, it was crushing. It honestly was crushing. And it was one of those moments that as a dad, I can't even fathom. I can't even imagine what his family is going through, the Bryant family, Vanessa. I mean, you got to think about it. You know, two of his kids that he has are young, 7 weeks and 3 years old, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. Two of his kids won't know who he is. I mean, won't remember growing up with him. So it puts everything in perspective. And for this individual, Kobe Bryant, this is a guy that crossed all spaces. This wasn't a guy who just affected the basketball community. He was very much a part of the football community, every sporting community, because it wasn't just about Kobe Bryant, the player, and the special talent that he was on the court. It was his approach to basketball. It was his approach to life, and everything that he approached, he tackled it with a fierceness, a tenacity that was unlike anything else. And you know, his Mamba mentality that he is so, you know, famously known for, that is something that every athlete aspires to try and be like, try to be like that Kobe Bryant killer instinct type of mentality. And it's unfortunate that we did not get to see what chapter two was going to be for him, because I truly believe that he was going to be a special person in the community, you know, in the second phase of his life.
Yeah. And look, whatever your feelings are about, you know, Kobe Bryant, and there are some people who just maybe you didn't grow up a sports fan or didn't grow up a Laker fan, and There are some people where Kobe Bryant brings up different emotions. There's some people who idolize him and see him as a hero.
If you're a Celtic fan, for example, you may have hated him.
Right.
Right.
Exactly. If you're from Boston, maybe you have different feelings. But
right.
I think everyone can look at this moment and really empathize with the family. And Jake, what you said about his daughters really stuck with me, too. As someone who lost a parent when I was younger, I think that initially there was the shock of seeing the story about Kobe Bryant, and I honestly thought it was a hoax. I thought it was fake because athletes that reach a kind of celebrity where they become kind of pop culture icons feel untouchable. And we know they're not, but they feel that way. And they feel like they'll just be a permanent part of your life. And to see that he was gone in a really tragic way and to compound the tragedy with two other young families and a promising coach and with his daughter, Gigi, all of it was heartbreaking. And I think what stuck with me as I went throughout the day was the thought of his family, of Vanessa and those three girls, thinking all of us are trying to process how we feel about this person. And we have a lot of different feelings. And I think what's most upsetting is how they're going to have to process it. And I really empathized with them having that kind of missing part of their life. There's a hole in their family now forever. And I really empathize with that feeling. The difference is I never had to experience this in front of the world. And my heart breaks, especially for their youngest, Capri, knowing that she'll never know her dad. And I think, too, to what you said, Jake, I think that there was a side of Kobe Bryant that we were starting to see in his retirement that we didn't always get to see while he was playing.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of rounded him out and it made him more whole. And in a way, it made him more human and not just this like superhuman icon in sports. It made him a more human person. And that was really nice to see. And I feel sad that we didn't get to see as much of that.
Yeah, I think yesterday, every time the story popped into my mind, and like I said, I was watching news coverage of it basically all day, but Stacey, like you, my mind kept sort of defaulting back to just thinking about what his family is going through at this moment. There's no way I could ever fathom emotionally, you know, wherever they are right now, what they must be going through, right? He leaves three daughters, like you said, one of which is probably too young to know what's going on. And a wife. I mean, that's just, it would be bad enough to just lose him or to just lose one of your kids. And here you, in the blink of an eye, you've lost two. No matter how you feel about Kobe Bryant, that is insanely tragic.
Yep.
I mean, it just, I don't know how much worse it can get, really, than something like that.
It's just, Lydia said something interesting. We were in the sports pit and she was saying that it's something where a lot of people are grieving very openly and there are a lot of different ways to handle it, right? And there's no right mm-hmm. or wrong way. There are some people who are heartbroken because Kobe was an icon and it felt like they knew Kobe and Kobe was a part of their lives for not just the 20 years he was playing, but beyond and sometimes before that. And, you know, whatever it is, let people process it in their own way, man. Just, this is tough. Like when people lose their heroes, it's really hard to handle. And not only that, but someone lost a part of their family. And again, people aren't two dimensional, right? Like sometimes it's possible to have a lot of different feelings about someone and that's okay.
That's a great point.
Yeah. And I think that there's also a natural aspect of this because we talk about Kobe's legacy and all the positive and great things, and there is a checkered past with Kobe, right? I mean, we did have this issue with him in terms of these rape allegations and all these things that came up, and ultimately they settled in a civil suit, and really from that point on with Kobe Bryant, you looked at his transformation. You looked at a guy, a young player who was on top of the world, and he was brash. He came in the league and said, I'm going to be better than Michael Jordan. I mean, he was really the first one that said that, and people didn't really know how to take it. And he backed it up with his play, his work, all that, but then it kind of culminates all into this situation that happened in Denver, And from that moment on, he really, you looked at it, he changed his number. He changed a lot of things in his life. And from that point on in 2003 to now, you look at Kobe and the legacy that he leaves, and it's very different. And it could have turned very much in a different way. And I think it just goes to show that, you know, from a standpoint, he did find redemption in that aspect.
Right now, I got three questions.
It's time for three questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 12 after 12, Tom Wassel's burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Enough with the "we got to protect the kids" nonsense.
I want to change one of these questions, and the reason why is because one of you just made me think of it. Michael Jordan is a household name. LeBron James is a household name. Hulk Hogan is a household name. Like, your non-sports fan parent knows who they are.
Mm-hmm.
Was Kobe a household name?
Yes.
He was, for sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
Kobe is absolutely a household name. You know, I think of just the simple little things of every single person in any office space. When you shoot you crumple up paper and you shoot it in the trash can, yell Kobe. When a young kid is playing on the schoolyard and he shoots a shot, he yells Kobe. I mean, those are the types of things that don't happen unless you're a true icon.
That's
in
a
the sport.
Thing, though.
Oh yeah,
it's a thing.
It is absolutely.
Definitely. I think there are a lot of families where Kobe is more of a household name than Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, I look at it and say that Kobe is interesting because you look at him and not just as a Laker fan or in the United States of America, but internationally, Kobe Bryant is a household athlete. And you know, really, you look at it from the NBA standpoint, he was really, Michael Jordan opened people's eyes internationally to basketball, but Kobe was the main ambassador. I mean, he was going to China. He grew basketball in China in new and different ways. Kobe Bryant was bilingual and went to France and to Europe and expanded the game that way. So he meant a lot to basketball and to the international sports scene.
I just didn't know if, I mean, I agree that he is. I just didn't know if he was a sports guy or if he was a culture guy.
Gotcha.
I think culture guy.
Yeah. It's more, like I said before, his mentality and the way that he approached sports was adopted and really sought after by everyone around the world because it was so unique and different. His work ethic, his approach, his competitiveness. I mean, people buying his books and trying to buy into anything that Kobe had to say. I mean,
yeah, but was it sports fans doing that? I mean, you're right. He's a speaker.
No, I mean, I didn't grow up a sports fan. I knew who he was.
Okay.
I mean, I'm saying from the point of view of not a sports fan.
Number two.
What's your favorite Kobe memory?
There's a lot. There's two that really come to mind, though. One is just like a general thing, and the other one's a specific moment. I think the specific moment is his final game, him scoring 60 points in his final game is just incredible to me. A guy who was really physically beat up, a guy who really at that point in time, he was just kind of getting by at the end, at his last season. They were managing his minutes, making sure that he can get through the entire year, and then at that point, his last game, he turns it on and says, look, I can compete. I can score 60 at any given night if I really wanted to. And I think that that legendary moment really sticks out to me. But overall, what impacts me about Kobe Bryant is he's the closest thing to Michael Jordan. When we talk about the all-time great Michael Jordan, his game, he had the same style, the same finesse, the same moves as Michael Jordan. And he is literally the only, he is the closest thing that we will ever get to Michael Jordan. And especially at my time, when I was watching the game of basketball, I saw the tail end of Michael Jordan's career, but I really felt like I got to embody it even more because I watched Kobe Bryant.
Yeah, taking those shots with the Achilles was the first thing that came to mind. Just the pain that he had, literally kind of like hobbling over and then hobbling off the field, or off the field, off the court. But I think the thing that came to mind, too, was yesterday when they were replaying the interview he had. Was it Jimmy Kimmel? He was on and he was talking about Gianna and talking about how I found it very refreshing.
We have that cut.
We have it?
Yeah, let me pull that up here because I, of course, opened the wrong folder. So give me 10 seconds here.
Okay, no problem. This is, as a preface, he's talking about.
I got it. I got it here.
Okay.
Do you think your daughter might want to play in the WNBA?
She does, for sure.
She does? Like,
I don't. I mean, this kid, man.
She's Wouldn't like, that be great?
Dude, man, I'm telling you. The best thing that happens is when we go out and fans will come up to me and she'll be standing next to me and they'll be like, hey, you got to have a boy. You and V got to have a boy, man. You have somebody carry on the tradition, the legacy. She's like, oi, I got this. You know, boy, for that, I got this. Like, that's right. Yes, you do.
I don't know. I thought it was really refreshing that he was incredibly proud to have not just his daughters, but that he didn't feel, I don't know, I think that sentiment of, oh, I wish I had a son, is more common than you or some listeners think it is. And it's really depressing when you're not a son. And I think that it was really cool how much he supported his daughter and how much it seemed like having daughters changed his life and supported the women's game so much. And again, you just kind of wonder, like, where could it have gone with that continued support?
My favorite Kobe memory is actually rooting against him in the 08 and 2010 finals. I wasn't a big Celtics fan, but with the Celtics and Lakers playing each other once again in the finals with that legendary rivalry, the fact that we got a second look at that again in 2010 was awesome, and I was rooting pretty hard for the Celtics. But Kobe Bryant in that second series where he was the MVP, he was the high scorer in 6 of the 7 games between both teams.
Yeah.
He was relentless in dragging his team to victory. It was him, Lamar Odom, Pau Gasol. What's next? Was it Andrew? Yeah, Andrew Bynum, who could barely walk at times. And when he was healthy, he was great. But mostly, it was just Kobe doing it. And he willed them to a championship. I rooted against him, but it was very fun to watch. Next.
Number 3.
Should they have played the NBA games yesterday?
I'm torn.
Or did you? I mean, because for all the games we did see, there were tributes galore. You saw the 24-second shot clock right for his jersey. They just let it run all the way down while there was a moment of silence.
More teams taking 8-second backcourt violations.
Exactly. There were all kinds of tributes in these arenas yesterday. Should they have played the games?
There's two sides of it for me. If it was up to Kobe Bryant, honestly, in his legacy and the way that he approached life and the game, he would have wanted them to continue to play. That's just, I firmly believe that. But on the flip side of it, I think that it was so emotional for those players, how much Kobe meant to them, that I don't know if it was the right thing to do for those players. And just for them mentally to be able to have that moment of grieving for an icon, a player that, you know, I look at Tyson Chandler, and he was a guy that got to be around Kobe, got to play with him, was a close friend. LeBron James, you know, some of these guys. I mean, it just was extremely emotional, and I would not have faulted the NBA one bit if they had decided to cancel the games for the day. But at the end of the day, it's a business, and they're still having to run the business and still, you know, selling tickets and all that kind of stuff. So I was torn about that.
Yeah, that's kind of how I felt about it. I was thinking, well, Kobe was known as one of the most intense competitors, so much so that at times it alienated him from other people, especially earlier in his career. So he probably would have been, in the spirit of Kobe Bryant, it would have been always play, always compete. But I don't think that that's the reason the NBA decided to keep the games going. I think it was very much a business decision. It'd be one thing if they were like, yeah, Kobe Bryant would have wanted this, but no, like, people are grieving and people are having a hard time, and the reason you are keeping the games going is a business decision.
It's that, but I mean, what time did that news break? About 11 o'clock here? You texted me
earlier than that. Actually, no.
It was right. It was 10:30, 11, we'll say, which means that the game's on the East Coast. It's 1:30 out there. I mean, what about all the fans that are already at these arenas?
Well, that's the thing, is that at the end of the day, it was a business decision by the NBA. They said, look, we have an obligation to the fans who are buying tickets.
It wasn't just like, hey, when we say business decision, like, hey, we're doing this for the money. I mean, those tickets are already paid for.
They are, but still, I mean, it's a decision that the NBA could have made, and I think a lot of people would have understood.
Yeah,
would there be people that would have been upset and wanted a refund of their ticket? Absolutely, but I think that was a moment that people would have walked away and said, you know what, that might be the right move for the NBA, and ultimately what was the the driving force? Was it because it was in honor of Kobe's memory, or was it because, hey, the show must go on? And yeah. I think it was the latter.
I do hope that if there's an opportunity for someone texted this in, and I agree, any kind of funeral service or memorial, that I hope that if there are games on that day, they reschedule them, because he was just so well-connected and beloved that I have a hard time thinking players in the games that would play on that day wouldn't want to go.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Yeah. I mean, seriously.
That
there's
would be
so
tough.
Many people that are, you know, whether it's coaches
yeah,
or players that are there that would want to attend that.
Yeah, that would be something I do hope they do.
I mean, could you imagine if, I mean, honestly, if you were a close friend of Kobe and you've got an NBA game to play, I mean, you're going to miss that game, right?
Right.
Like, there's no way you're going to go to the game. You're going to go to the funeral. So I do think that would be a good form on the NBA's part.
I want to end here with a quick story from Jay Williams. Jay Williams of ESPN. He went to Duke. He was the one who he was drafted. Was he number one overall? I think he was drafted number one overall. He ended up getting a motorcycle accident.
Correct.
Which derailed his career completely. But he's telling a quick story here about running into Kobe when he was a young player. He got to the arena 4 hours before tip-off. What did he see?
I see Kobe Bryant already working out. So once I set my foot across that line, I started working out. And so I worked out for a good hour and a half. And when I came off, after I was done, I sat down. And, of course, I still heard the ball bouncing. I looked down, I'm like, this guy's still working out? So he was working out. Like, it looks like he was in a dead sweat when I got here. And he's still going. And it's not like his moves are nonchalant or lazy. He's doing, like, game moves, you know? I sit there and I unlace my shoes. I'm like, oh, let's see how long this goes. So I sit out there and watch. Another 25 minutes. And he got done. He said, okay, I think I've seen enough. Go play, you know, come back. Get in the sauna, get ready for the game. That game, he drops 40 on us, okay? And after the game is over, I'm like, I have to ask this guy. Like, I have to understand, like, why he works like that.
Right.
So after the game is over, I'm like, hey, Kobe, like, why were you in the gym for so long? He's like, because I saw you come in. and I wanted you to know that it doesn't matter how hard you work, that I'm willing to work harder than you.
Unbelievable story. Totally driven guy. That's one of the things, one of the many things he'll be remembered for. We'll be talking a lot more about this throughout the show. Mike Salk is in next. Tom, Jake, and Stacey, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Rost.
Pleasure to have Mike Salk in here on a Monday. Mike, do you want to play a quick game of Guess the Percentages?
Yes, I'm great at this.
You are good?
I'm
okay.
a world-renowned Guess the Percentages player.
World-renowned,
yes,
huh? Okay.
In my own mind.
All right, I put out a poll.
Okay.
3,300 responses, 3,300 votes.
Okay.
Which category do you fall into as a Mariner fan? I'm not asking you. I'm just going to give you the categories
all
here.
All right.
Category one. You're all in and you're patient.
Okay.
You're in, but you expect results now. You're out until they win.
Okay.
Or you've just completely given up.
All right. Category three is the highest for sure.
Out until they win.
Out until they win. That's got to be like 40%, 38%, somewhere in that range.
Do we get a guess too?
No, Stacey.
This is my game, right? I'm in.
Yeah, he's our guest for right now.
38-40%.
Kyle, I'm
going to
turn off my mic and tell you my guess.
Okay.
Second place is the right answer, which is the first one. I'm all in and I'm patient. And that's like, I don't know, 20-something percent. Then you have out forever, and I don't know what's left is...
And in respect results now.
Yeah, because how can you respect results now? They're rebuilding now.
Oh, Mikey.
Oh.
But that's a small number.
That's like 10...
It's 7%.
Yeah, that's a small group of same old Mariner outliers.
Okay.
So they're fine.
So you think it's out until they win is the one you think is the highest?
Yes.
What was the highest?
I'm going to read it to you now.
Okay.
All in and patient... 54%.
Wow.
The silent majority.
Great to hear.
Kyle, that's what I said, remember?
That's what Stacey guessed.
Way to go, Stacey.
Good to hear.
Second was good job,
Kyle.
The people who expect results now, 7%. Out until they win, 18%. Completely given up, 21%.
Okay.
A little surprised that that number was as high as it was, but okay, whatever. The silent majority
But that group is also probably wrong. That group says that's where they are, but they're probably really in Category 3. They say they're out forever, but they're probably not. The moment a team really starts winning and proving to them that they're worth following, I think they come back. And I think, you know, that group probably combined is probably, what, close to 40% or so. So, I think there's something to that.
Not only when that group of people comes back, by the way, when they start to win, I want them on their hands and knees.
Groveling.
Groveling before Jerry DePoto and Scott Servais saying, please let us back
in. It's interesting that the people that are all out are still voting in a Mariners poll on a sports talk
host's
Twitter account.
All right, so hold on. If this happens, if the world aligns correctly, the stars align, and the Mariners get good here in 2 or 3 years, and they make the playoffs and they make a World Series run, the whole deal, who do those people need to apologize to the most? Like, who's the number? Like, do they owe their biggest apology to John Stanton, to Jerry DePoto, to Scott Servais? Is it to all of us here on the radio station who are forced to listen to them complain? Is it to the Mariners, like the Mariners players? Who do they owe their biggest apology to if it ever happens?
I guess in my mind, it stands out to Jerry DePoto, because I think that a lot of people are sending out their 19 years of frustration out on Jerry. And from a GM perspective. And I think that, to me, in my mind, is, you know, this is a new process. And this is something that, as I got into sports talk radio a year and a half ago or so, I mean, this is something that you've said for a long time, Saul, because you can't blame Jerry for all the past things that have happened. You understand the sentiment and people being tired and frustrated about the Mariners organization, but ultimately, what do you want the Mariners to do at this point?
Quit?
They've shown their hand. This is the first time that they've really shown their hand and said, look, this is our plan. This is how we're going about it. And if we don't execute the plan, then you have every single right to get
blaming Jerry DePoto for the team not making the playoffs for 20 years is like talking about how, you know, well, historically, the Seahawks, when they go to Kansas City, are one, like, so you're telling me that how the, like, 1993 Seahawks did against the Chiefs is relevant to what's going to happen in 2020? No, it isn't. That's what happened 20 years ago. Like, who cares? I find that thing always kind of sticks with me of, like, you can blame people for their own sins. And Jerry DePoto's made mistakes. And by the way, you can criticize him for it. You want to criticize him for giving away Chris Taylor? Go ahead. You want to say that in retrospect, the deal with the Diamondbacks isn't as good as it looked in the first year? Those are fair criticisms. And if Jerry were sitting here, I think he would own those. He'd also point to some of his successes as well. But it's not fair to point at Jerry DePoto and say, hey, how come you guys didn't draft Troy Tulowitzki? And how come you didn't draft Tim Lincecum? Well, I don't know. I was not there. Like, I'm sorry that there were mistakes. How come Dustin Ackley failed? I wasn't here. I think he's gone about it the right way. History will decide whether or not it's going to work, but he has put his resources into development, which the Mariners have never done particularly well. He has put resources into trading for youth here in the last year or so, and significant resources into the draft. That's how you make your team better.
This hour of Tom, Jake, and Stacey is brought to you by Car Toys. Here's the reality. No matter what category you fall into, you don't have to apologize to anybody.
No, you don't have to.
It's part of being a fan. You can do whatever you want, say whatever you want, whenever you want, and then just, you know, do a 180 on it the next day. That's fine.
During my year in Boston, my ill-fated year in Boston, I worked with a guy named Michael Hawley, and our show was not particularly good. But one of the things that I took from Michael moving forward, he used to say, look, we're all hypocrites. In sports, you can't help it. There will come a time almost every day where you will say something either on the radio or as a fan, just, you know, just thinking as a fan, where somebody could tell you, well, but that's different from how you thought of it this other way. And you know what the answer always is? Yeah, it's sports fandom. I'm a hypocrite. Like, you just have to kind of accept a lot of the hypocrisy that goes with being a sports fan. It's just part of life. So I agree with you. They don't actually have to apologize, but I like thinking about the idea of making them do so.
switching gears here.
Them to apologize to me.
While I was down at the Pro Bowl, it was interesting to be around not just Russ and Shaquille and the Seahawks coaching staff, but to see the NFC players on that Pro Bowl roster and how they talked about Pete Carroll and what their impressions of Pete Carroll was. And the impression that I walked away from
fired
is that Pete Carroll to them is an absolute star. Mm. And he is. And I think for us in the Seattle fan base, we have become so acclimated to Pete Carroll and his style and the way that he goes about things that we really truly forget how special of a coach that he is. And just in that week, his impact and his impression that he left on all those guys, I mean, it's the Pro Bowl, and they actually wanted to practice and play. So, like, they were excited to be there and be around him.
A couple of questions for you guys about that. The first one is, 37 minutes into the show, how many times has Jake mentioned that he was at the Pro Bowl? And
surprisingly, this is the first time.
This is the first one.
I know.
Amazing.
He's
I figured
not
that
like
would have
me.
Been nonstop.
Yeah, no.
Wow. You didn't really learn from Brock then, because Brock would have mentioned it at least 30 times by now. Two, how many coaches are in that category? Of the 32 coaches in the NFL, I agree with you. I think Pete Carroll is a star and has star power, and it makes these ridiculous arguments of firing Pete for silly reasons seem even more out there. But how many coaches do you think actually have some of that star power? Do you think it's a handful?
It's really a handful. There's four guys that come to my mind right away. That is Bill Belichick, Pete Carroll, John Harbaugh, and I would say Sean Payton. You talk
Andy
about
Reid?
Andy Reid, yeah.
It's been doing it forever.
Yeah, you're probably
I would think
right.
Andy Reid would come
five
pretty close.
Andy Reid. I wouldn't give it to Sean McVay yet. Gruden probably would
be
another
star
guy.
Power,
he's
but
got
for different
reasons.
Does Mike
any
Tomlin?
Success.
Yeah, it's
Mike Tomlin?
Tomlin. I think only for longevity.
Yeah, for longevity, even his personality. But I think really you keep it in those five.
What about
I
New York Giants tight end coach Freddie Kitchens?
That's a great question. What about him?
Nah, I'd leave him out there. Tomlin to me would be six at the most. And really, I would leave it at the five that we mentioned earlier due to success, personality, and impact in terms of scheme and how they've impacted the game itself. And for those five guys, I mean, the respect that those when they walk into the room, everybody's going to listen. But also from the standpoint of Pete Carroll making a Pro Bowl and making it fun, making it exciting, when I've heard other stories about coaches coming in, I won't say names, but that they're trying to come in and act like this is their show and they're going to run it. Their organization's the best thing in the world. And it's completely fake. It's absolutely fake. And the guys just roll their eyes and are like, listen, dude, I'm here for a week to have fun.
Who's the AFC coach for this?
John Harbaugh.
John Harbaugh. So you kind of have two coaches there who both have some of that star power.
Yeah.
Does it translate? You see it kind of affect them?
Yeah, the way they walked around in practice, the way that they were excited about the game. I mean,
will it translate to like more free agents coming here in the offseason?
I do think it has something. It does have a positive effect. A lot of these guys that are on the free agent list, Seattle just bumped up to top three in their list. I mean,
we've seen that before, right? I mean, we've seen guys with other options choose the Seahawks. Not every time. Obviously, Jared Allen is sort of the one that got away in that, right? Because he was going to come here and then ends up deciding that family stuff is more important. But for the most part, when the Seahawks identify somebody, don't they usually get them? I mean, it's why I would assume that Jadeveon Clowney is going to end up here in Seattle. We'll wait and see, and money will play a role in it. But I think one of the things that brings you, it's not always going to get you a discount. But when you identify a player, you're usually going to get them. It's rare that a player just says, I'm out of here. I don't want to go to Seattle. And it worked in the Clowney thing when you traded for him, right? He said no to Miami, but he would absolutely come to Seattle. And I'm sure Pete's star power is a big part of that, because it's not like they were being picked to win their division.
Yeah, it's very true. I'll leave you with this. Is Richard Sherman, if Seattle wanted him back and prioritized him to be back, he'd still be here. I mean, you could say whatever you want, but to hammer out that point that the Seahawks want you and they want to keep you, there's a good chance that you're going to stay.
Didn't he get away?
Justin Upton's guy got away twice, I think.
Right.
Like he kept getting away.
He laid it out. He did not want to come to Seattle.
That was probably for the best, because Justin Upton turned out not to be that good.
That's probably true.
Yeah.
Three things that Jake learned at the Pro Bowl. We're going to talk about those next. Tom, Jake, and Stacy, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Rost.
Yeah, the reason why Jake hasn't said that he has been to the Pro Bowl 38 times so far in the show is because we've had this other tragic news that has obviously distracted us, right? I mean, normally,
sure,
if we didn't have overwhelming national news to get to, I'm sure it would have been the first thing out of your mouth. You would have said, hey, guys, guess where I was last week. Here's reasons 1 through 40 why it was awesome.
See, I feel like
I mean,
typical
Pro Bowl.
Jake, Orlando, Jake Fashion would have been, we would have all been having a conversation during a break, and then he would have been like, oh, and by the way, I went to the Pro Bowl. And then he would have left the room to go get water to leave us all like, wait, what?
He did what?
Universal did what? Studios, Andretti's, yeah.
Hey, Jake, can I borrow that pen? That. Yeah, I went to the Pro Bowl.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how we would have.
It's not a Pro Bowl pen, but I did stay at the Marriott Orlando.
That's right.
All right, so in recognition of his great accomplishment, we're going to, I hope you've got at least three things that you've learned down there.
Oh, three things? Of course, three things.
Okay, well, let's start with numero uno.
Okay, numero uno, very obvious that Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll were going to work. And what I mean by that is not just showing up and trying to have a good Pro Bowl experience, but that they were out there recruiting. That they were out there looking at the AFC, NFC rosters and saying, who's available for free agency and how can we talk to these guys, build relationships, and do all that. I think that was very evident for them to really, as Pete Carroll says, always compete and compete in every aspect and really give a good visual as what it would be like to play under Coach Carroll and what it would be like to play with Russell Wilson. And also, one of the questions you guys asked me was Russell Wilson just always was he always as dialed in as it looked like in the skill challenge? Yeah. I mean, one, as a competitor, he is. But two, you got to also think about every opportunity that you have to show your skill set and to show that you're different and separate from every other quarterback in the league, that you're special and that you want to come play with me. Why are you not going to take advantage of that opportunity? So I think that was very evident to me when I was out there.
Do they have the type of – I mean, I know what the answer to this question is, but Pete Carroll, Russell Wilson – they've got that magnetic type of personality where I would think these guys that they're trying to form relationships with would want to talk to them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like Brock Heward always told me, he said, Tom, life's about relationships. And whenever he would say that to me, I'd be like, damn. Because I'm not the type of person who can just go out and form relationships. I'm just not good at it. But Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll are.
They absolutely are. And the other side of that, too, is that they are also testing out these other guys. Like, it's one, it's a recruitment process, but also it's a chance to play with some of these other guys and for them to say, I don't really like that guy. You know, I don't like his attitude or his approach or the conversations that we have. So it's a feel-out process as well. It's a recruiting process and then also being able to say, X that guy off the list.
Numero dos. The weather was a problem in Florida.
Yes, it was disappointing.
Tom, you say that with such disdain.
The weather was a problem.
Oh, it was.
The first 2 days, it probably was colder in Orlando than it was here, in all honesty. It was raining. I went there to enjoy the sunshine, and I didn't get any of it. Okay?
But you're jerks.
Any
you
of it.
With no.
You're looking at
sunshine.
Kyle, in production meetings, you said you noticed that Lisa Salters.
Poor Lisa Salters.
She was bundled up in
a beanie. She was wearing a turtleneck. She had gloves on so she could hold the microphone. She was interviewing Devontae Adams. Her teeth were nearly clattering and chattering.
In Orlando, Florida, are you kidding me? And that's what I thought. I did not come dressed for the weather, and I was freezing my tail off during the skills challenge. And that's also something that I learned, that it's not just this year, but it's been the past 3 years at the Pro Bowl, is that the weather and everything is just not – it's not like Hawaii. And so it will be something interesting to see what they decide to do, because I don't think it's going to be at Orlando – you know, in the foreseeable future. I think they're going to move it probably to L.A. or Las Vegas or possibly back to Hawaii.
Have they done it in Orlando the last couple of years? Didn't they do it in Miami 1 year?
They tried to do it at the site of the Super Bowl once, and then they've been jumping around Honolulu, Super Bowl, Orlando.
The Pro Bowl has always been associated with Aloha Stadium in Honolulu. That's where Honolulu, right? That's where it should be. I know the stadium is dilapidated, but wouldn't players still want to go to Hawaii?
Yes.
Just to go to Hawaii?
I would. I think the idea was, if we move it to the kind of continental U.S. or the main 48, that people will, it'll be more of a big deal. We're tired of people looking at the Pro Bowl as just kind of like a wasted weekend. So if we have it in Orlando, it will definitely become a bigger deal. And it just ended up being poor weather and kind of the same thing.
Right. And in reality, it should be a great venue because you've got Disneyland, Universal,
right,
you've got all these attractions. You got
alligators.
You've got the worldwide sports complex for Disney. It's a perfect venue, but
manatees.
Ultimately, it just has not come together the way that they thought it would.
Flamingos.
Other birds that are there.
Can we move on to three? While,
okay,
while
sorry.
You're
yes.
No,
okay.
We can't.
Making fun of me.
Yeah, no, we got to hurry. We only have a minute.
No, we don't even have a minute. We're going to have to do it around the corner.
What?
How do you like that?
Well,
oh,
we just took
on.
So long.
Three
we took
was
too
gonna
long
be,
teasing.
Three was going to be good, too.
Jake's got one more. He says the best player in the league is not so great. 710 ESPN Seattle.